guys, and welcome to Prose Before Hoes,
the podcast where we talk about what we're thinking, drinking, and reading.
I was about to say good week, Elle, but that's not an English phrase.
Good morrow.
Good morrow, fair housemate. How are you on this
cold and wintry evening? I'm as good as can be. Can't complain.
I feel like we've hunkered down in an appropriate way for this evening with our drink. It's good. I'm actually new to this, but Elle has gotten me onto this. Immediately, I've had two sips, and I'm like, I'm concerned this is going to become an evening fixture.
It's so good.
We're having a Bailey's and a decaf coffee with a little sprinkle of oat milk in it. And it's very nice. If you haven't tried it, I can really recommend it. It
tastes like holidays.
Hazelnutty.
Yeah.
Is that right? There's hazelnut.
I don't know. Is there hazelnut in Bailey's? Bailey's have, like, loads of different flavours, but that's just the classic.
I'm getting, like, notes of hazelnut.
No, maybe it's the oats.
Could be the oats. The oats do sometimes taste like hazelnuts.
No, but, like, that sort of, like...
Yeah, cereally kind of. Definitely. Either way, it's very nice. And if you're looking for a warm... And you know what? Honestly, treat yourself. Because it's going to be a long few months. So, I am shedding a tear too.
You need to put some Baileys in your coffee in your morning?
Yeah. Do it in the morning. You do it with your mid-morning coffee. You do it with your mid-afternoon coffee.
Tia Maria also in coffee is nice.
Well, there you go. You do not have to get through this sober. And we are here to tell you that. You probably
but
should.
But also, though, please drink responsibly.
Mm.
Whatever responsibly means to you.
Yeah. Also, feel free to interpret that as you wish.
I don't really like hot beverages. I'm a cold beverage gal.
You are. This girl does not drink tea.
And tea. I like iced tea. And I sometimes have a mint tea. But...
Yeah, mint tea is lit. I like mint tea.
But yeah, just not really one for... warm drinks. I like cold, clean drinks. Warm drinks always feel a bit like creamy, even if they don't have cream in them.
I love it when it's creamy. What else have you been enjoying this week?
Take sip. I've enjoyed the fact that I've managed to get a trip into Brighton to see my sister, who I've literally not seen all year. She's doing sculpture. She's an artist. She's doing sculpture at Brighton. So that was really nice. Seeing her, meeting her housemates, being by the sea. I also went to Margate, which is also on the sea. Just haven't really been in London.
That's nice. I think that, I mean, I had last week off, which was magnificent. After a whole year of not having, like, more than a three-day weekend, basically. And I went to Lewis in Sussex, which was really nice. I recommend Lewis for a day trip. Actually, really good pubs, lots of lovely walks, lots of really lovely independent shops.
That's
I
what
really
we
rated
like.
That. We love a good independent shop. And if you do a certain walk, you can see the sea.
Lovely.
And I haven't actually seen the sea this year, other than that, looking at it from about 10, which is not my usual style. Your girl likes a beach. I really can heartily recommend a cheese shop in Lewis called Cheese Please.
And is that where my cheese was from?
I bought Elle some delightful goat's cheese as a
gift. So good. That's what I've liked as well. That was on my list.
Mm-hmm. What did you make with it?
I just did the classic caramelised red onion, goat's cheese.
Classic middle class staple. Middling upper class.
It's such a good combination.
I don't like goat's cheese, but I love you, so I'll buy you goat's cheese. Even though it stank up my suitcase. Christ.
I can imagine.
I was like, I'm not going to open this bag on the train because somebody will kill me. We watched a really nice TV show the other night, didn't we? Tiny Worlds. We got to talk about Tiny Worlds.
But we missed the dogs.
So there's this, I don't know if... not that many people seem to have Apple TV Plus, but there are actually some very good shows on there, and you can get a week's free trial. And if you have a new Apple product, I think for the first 2 months, you can get a free year if you sign up in time.
Ooh.
So if you buy yourself a new Apple product, just bear in mind that you can get that. And there's
maybe you'll buy the, what's it, iPhone 12 or something ridiculous?
Perchance you will if you have stupid amounts of money.
Just like, why?
Just need a really high definition selfie camera. I want to capture everything. I don't want to like myself anymore. I just want to know exactly what I look like in excruciating detail.
In the lighting of my home. Yeah. That's where I will be all winter.
Yeah, so we watched Tiny Worlds, which was like a nature show about tiny animals of a large variety, everything from small mammals to insects, narrated by Paul Rudd. And I don't think I've spoken about how much I love Paul Rudd on the podcast yet, but I love Paul Rudd. My goal as a publisher is to publish a book by or about Paul Rudd.
By would be better, because then you get to By would talk be better,
but then I think about would be good too.
You want him involved, though, so that you can talk to him.
Oh, I just feel like he's a cool guy and he'd get involved anyway. I just love Paul Rudd. He's my ideal husband. Paul, if you're listening, you're a little bit old for me. Do you have a younger brother?
Is he married? Is he with someone?
I also think he's married.
Does he have kids?
I don't think he has kids. I don't know.
It'd be weird if he had kids, because then when they got to be, like, 20, they'd look the same as him. And you'd be like, I mean, which one's like, Paul Rudd?
He's, like, 55, so they might be 20 already.
True.
But yeah,
my point was that he just doesn't age.
He really doesn't. He is a flawless man. Yeah, it was a really wholesome documentary. And actually, I felt like there were a lot of animals there that I hadn't seen before, which is quite rare now.
That was exciting.
And they all had obscene names. I wish we'd written some of them down, but I really, really recommend watching that. It only took us one evening. I can't tell if that's because we watched it too quickly or if it's because it's not that long.
They're only like 25 minute episodes.
Yeah, yeah. It's an easy watch. There were like six. It is good, wholesome watching for when you've got your Baileys.
Do you remember that? Was it a praying mantis that looked like a snake? That was the biggest.
Oh, the caterpillar. Whoa! There was a caterpillar that looked like a snake. There was a satanic pygmy monkey.
That was quite the U-turn.
Jarring.
It was really entertaining and amusing, but I'm not sure it was supposed to be.
Yeah, I think Elle and I just got way too invested in it.
Also, it did make me realise how... I mean, obviously I knew that David Attenborough documentaries are like the pinnacle,
yeah,
but it really hammered home the quality of David Attenborough documentaries.
I mean, I thought this was... I mean, it was such a different audience. Like, this was so much less of a serious vibe. Like, I don't think they wanted...
Also, like, was there a narrative? It was like this, but also this, but also, remember this.
Oh, yeah, sorry. There was no narrative, but it was really entertaining.
It was... Yeah, it was good. It's worth a watch.
Speaking of tiny animals, I really need to share this headline that I came across. It's from The Independent. Cocaine in the River Thames is just another problem eels don't need, says expert. I need to know more. I need to know more urgently.
See, you're always complaining, but at least you're not an eel.
That's true. I wake up every day and I go, God, honestly, everything is falling apart, but at least I have opposable thumbs, arms and legs.
Do you know, did you read it? What are the problems that they're going... Because actually, that's the
Absolutely
only...
not. I would not read that article.
That is the only problem I do know that eels face is... recreational drugs in the Thames.
At least they're having a good time. Kidding. Don't do drugs.
Elle, please cut that bit out.
Elle, we're going to need to edit that bit out. Yeah, and then I also watched on my week off Love Life with Anna Kendrick, which was really good.
Oh, yeah,
really
we're going to talk about this, huh?
I'm going to talk about it, and I'm
sorry.
She
went and did it again.
I might have watched it without Elle again.
But the thing is, it's that you bring it up. Oh, let's watch this.
Yeah, but then you're so busy and I'm so impatient. I'm a child. Anyway, it's really good. You should definitely watch it.
Okay.
It is. It's really good. I really like Anna Kendrick. I think she's got a lot of character.
Got a bit about her.
She's got a bit about her. It's got something about her. It's on iPlayer, so easily accessible for the British public. If you have a TV license.
I was just about to say that. We also started watching adult material, and it wasn't what we expected.
Oh, we did start watching adult material, didn't we?
Liked it a lot.
Riveting. I mean, definitely trigger warnings if you're going to watch that. But
just not what I expected.
It's really interesting. It's about this British porn star who has a family and...
And there's a lot going on.
I want to like summarise the plot, but there's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot. It's about the UK porn industry and like that versus reality and real life and kind of everyday problems and
relationships, porn industry and loyalty.
Loyalty.
Next on the list is Sarah Pascoe's new sitcom, Out of Her Mind, or Out of My Mind. That's all on iPlayer now. So.
Well, we will review that shortly for you.
What else have I been enjoying?
Any music for us?
Yes.
She's got some tunes.
I've actually like laid off that recently because I thought I was getting a bit too like...
You're making it sound like a drug. Like I've laid off the intense feeling of a good song.
No, I haven't laid off the music. I've just laid off telling you about it because I thought it was like... And now it's Ellie's time to talk about what she's enjoying.
We should talk about... So we've mentioned our shared Casa North playlist on the podcast before.
Infamous.
Infamous. and
it even
L.
Public? I don't even know if it's public.
I don't. We can make it public for you guys if you'd like. There are some very good songs on there. We both put songs on kind of respectively of our own accord to it. We don't plan it, but I think we have a vibe.
Yeah, I will add songs to it that I like that I think you will like.
And I do the same. Mm. Also put songs that I think will contribute to the vibe.
Yeah.
And L put a song that I absolutely love.
And I added it being like, Camilla is going to love this song.
It's called Good Kisser by Lake Street Drive. Really recommend listening to it. It's a certified banger. She knows me. She knows me too well. You know how there's like words that capture feelings that we don't have in English but other languages have? Like, is there a word for when you listen to just a song that is such a banger that you feel complete for a moment? Is there like a German word for that?
If no, we've got, but there's a French word for that.
I think there's going to be like an Austrian word for it or something.
I think there's going to be a French word that means when you listen or view or read art and you feel more yourself.
I felt very myself listening to that song. I really enjoyed it.
What else have I been listening to? Easy Life have just released their new single, Daydreams. I listened to that all morning on repeat. So listen to that. We all know that my favourite way to communicate is through song recommendations.
Yeah, she hates communicating by A, picking up her phone, or B, replying to my texts. What she does like to do is, maybe that's how you should text me now, is you just add songs to the shared playlist that make up a message. I'll allow you not picking up the phone if you can do that in a way that both conveys what you need to say when you need to say it, and it doesn't ruin the theme of the playlist.
I do just, not such a fan of texting, but if you send me a song, I'll listen to it immediately.
To be fair, when I call you, it's incredibly urgent stuff. Like, they don't have white tequila. Or
white tequila?
Silver tequila. Which is clear. It's not even white. I don't know what I'm saying. They don't have silver tequila. Or I'm leaving the house. Bye. Why aren't you picking up your phone? How will you know where I am?
I was actually cooking food.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah, it's not an excuse.
So I like communicating for music recommendations. I was introduced actually to a band that I had listened to but hadn't like noted the name of. Kruang Bin. My favourite song at the moment is So We Won't Forget. Really good to like, it's very like relaxed and chilled and a bit like jingly jangly, but like good to work to.
Yeah, we've definitely used the phrase jingly jangly to describe songs on the podcast before.
People know if they hear a song. If it's a bit jingly jangly, they know I like it.
I like songs with a good drop, but the drop is like country.
Oh, I also love a cowbell and a flute drop.
Oh, a flute drop. Oh.
Now for judging a book by its cover.
So in this segment, we're gonna talk about a book one of us hasn't read, which I know sounds slightly contradictory to the entire point of this podcast, but I promise we will be talking about things we have read afterwards. In this section, one of us will have read a book, the other person won't have. The person who hasn't read the book has to guess the plot of the book on its cover alone. So this week, I have given Elle a book that I read recently. It's a book by one of my favourite new authors. I mean, she published her last book in 2017 or 2018, so she's relatively new on the scene. It's Sophie McIntosh. It's a beautiful pink and red cover.
And blue.
I was going to get there. Slow down, buddy. So it's like pink with a photograph of a woman looking at herself in a broken mirror that she's holding up.
Is it definitely a woman?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like this might have impacted your...
Well, I just don't... Initially, I thought it was a woman, but then on closer inspection, I thought, not necessarily.
Yeah, it is a woman. And she's looking at herself in a broken mirror, holding up with her hands, and the photograph has been tinted red by the designer. And then in the bottom corner, there is the title, which is Blue Ticket. It's her new novel. Her first novel was the Man Booker Prize long-listed book, The Water Cure, which is also fantastic. Yeah. But we will get onto that.
Oh, it's her.
I love that you're acting surprised, like I didn't send you this front cover with that written on it.
Oh yeah, but I deliberately don't read the writing.
The text, oh okay.
Because I think that might, I don't know, tell me something.
And it would have.
See, there you go.
Yeah, so I really, really like this book, but what do you think it was about, Elle?
Okay, so this could be completely wrong, but a blue ticket in the US Army, I think, a blue ticket is... it's like neither, I don't think it's honourable or dishonourable, but it's like a discharge, which they used to, I think, often, not officially, but it was often given to homosexuals who they wanted to get out the army. So okay. They'd give them, it was like called a blue ticket, the type of discharge.
Yeah.
So that's what blue ticket made me think of, but I don't know. There's a mirror fragment, so I guess cliches of identity.
I mean, have we ever read a book where identity hasn't featured?
But as in, like, the mirror and, like, reflection and the distorted colours. Yeah, what does it mean? Who am I? Pink and blue, but typically gendered colours.
Mm.
If we bounced off the connotations that blue ticket had, that also encompasses ideas of gender and identity.
Mm.
Her expression, I just... Okay, I can see it's a woman, but that could be a man.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, like,
it's not
super
like,
clear.
Yeah.
I think having read her last book, I assumed, based on the sort of stuff that she writes about.
Mm. She looks quite despondent, maybe? Or I can't tell if her gaze is, like, looking at something or, like, looking through something.
Maybe both.
Maybe both. Okay, so it's dystopian theme. So I'm gonna guess, let's just run with it. So blue ticket, ideas of homosexuality, maybe being like discriminated.
Yeah.
Also other words that end in id that I can't think of.
Prejudiced against.
Yeah. All that.
Yeah. Okay.
Ideas of gender, sexuality, identity with a sort of authoritarian or governmental structure. Taken to an extreme.
Okay, interesting. So I think in some respects you're right. I like this idea of linking, and actually it's not something I knew, that blue ticket was a type of discharge from the army, because in a way I actually think that's kind of relevant, but not something I would have thought of before. So it's not about, well, I mean, I'm not going to say it's not about sexuality, because it is in the book, but I wouldn't say that's the main focus of it. Uh-huh. In fact, if anything, I would say that that is part of it, but also so is heteronormative. That's not really the focus of it. It's just very something that happens in the book.
Sex it happens.
Yeah, so blue ticket, I'm gonna read the blurb. Calla knows how the lottery works. Everyone does. On the day of your first bleed, you report to the station to learn what kind of woman you will be. A white ticket grants you children. A blue ticket grants you freedom. You are relieved of the terrible burden of choice, and once you've taken your ticket, there's no going back. But what if the life you're given is the wrong one? Blue Ticket is a devastating inquiry into free will, fate, and the fraught space of motherhood. Bold and chilling, it pushes beneath the skin of female identity and patriarchal violence to the point where human longing meets our animal bodies. I love Sophie McIntosh's writing so much. I love it so much. I loved her first book, The Water Cure, and I loved this. Oh, it's so hard to, like, describe. It's, like, a really dark and quietly haunting look at women's choice, women's privacy, the control over their bodies, and the emotional connections that we forge. I think what Sophie McIntosh does so well is she takes these feelings that we have and these small fears that kind of outline our everyday life, and she blows them up until you can't see anything else, but in this really, like, subtle way. She essentially distills these attitudes into a form that is not that hard to believe, because while it's both completely otherworldly and strange, it really hits close to the bone. And she's really good at picking up on these attitudes that have become so ingrained and casual within society, and that are so quietly damaging that we no longer examine them, because we've just sort of moved beyond it, and most of society thinks it's not happening anymore. You know, half of society thinks it's not happening anymore. Guess which half? Especially when it comes to women's choice, their freedoms and their relationships with men. And she kind of picks at them until they become undone and it all implodes. But it's all done so calmly.
Mm-hmm.
So at no point, even though there are these huge dramatic things happening, at no point does it feel like there are huge dramatic things happening. Mm-hmm. It almost feels normal. And I think that is part of a brilliant dystopian novel.
Does it still feel horrifying?
Yes, it's still obviously the idea of being told you will all have children and having that choice taken away from you is horrifying, but realistically that is still something that happens to women.
Is there, like, the horror of that sustained in other things that happen throughout it? Or is it kind of like at the beginning there's this what, and then it all kind of feels normal? Or is there, like, lots of things throughout that you're just like, ugh?
So, I would say she's really, really good at creating vague realities. So violence, it always, like, exists on the fringe. And I think it's incredible that she can make something with such a lack of clear description so completely terrifying and unnerving. And again, I think that she's able to do that because actually what's important is obviously the political structures are important, but they're not the focus. And you don't really know why. You never really know why this happens. No reasoning is ever given for why it happens. It's like, that's not important. What's important is the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And she really centres in on that. Her writing is, I mean, it's frightening and it's tender. And her first book, I'll talk a little bit about that one as well. Because, again, that is a dystopian novel very much centred around women's experiences outside of the world. But also in relation to men.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a large part of Blue Ticket as well.
When they're given their ticket at the start.
Yeah.
Is the ticket based on anything?
No.
It's just randomised.
Well, I don't want to give anything away.
Okay.
But you're given the impression at the start of the book that it's not based on anything. It's not really explained throughout the book. But I won't say whether or not it's revealed at the end because I don't want to give it away.
Okay.
But yeah, no. So her first book, The Water Cure, is about a family, three girls and their parents alone in this big house on an unnamed coast / island.
Sounds like I would love it.
Yeah. Yeah, only, and they're kind of isolated. They don't interact with anybody else. You don't know if there's anyone else on the island / country / planet. Like, okay. It's never discussed. And the parents believe that isolating them like that is the only way to protect them from the toxic air elsewhere. No it proof or evidence.
Sounds like a metaphor.
Yeah. Anywhere. Yeah, so the toxic air, I think, is kind of allusion to where men live. There's also a father there who is keeping them there, and they kind of put their daughters through indescribable acts of cruelty. So they kind of put them into, they're sewn into fainting sacks, and drowning dresses. So they,
what's
kind of
a fainting sack?
Yeah, well, I'll let you read the book. Like, they basically, like, semi-torture their daughters until it becomes normalized to them. And then one day their father just completely disappears, and in the afterglow of this, the mother kind of honors the father's traditions and continues putting her daughters through these trials, almost. And I think it kind of says something about how we kind of continue to subject ourselves to outdated societal norms.
Sounds like a horror.
Yeah, and they're kind of... But it's not, because she writes so softly. And actually, it's a really beautiful story in a way, because even though it's set in this horrible world, and you don't actually know whether the outside world is really horrible... You just know that this world is horrible, but it's implied that there is a dystopia around
it. Isn't that interesting? That when you described it, I was like, I think the world outside is just the world we have.
So at one point, three random men show up on their coast, and that forms a large part of the narrative, is their interactions with them. And what happens when their father leaves is these three girls, and you kind of read the book through their different narratives, is it's very much about them grappling to break free from these male constraints that have been enforced upon them. And how they're used to having their father impose certain narratives. But when other men come in to do it, they start to kind of put two and two together. And they're like, wait a second, maybe it doesn't have to be like this. Yeah, I really recommend that everyone reads The Water Cure and Blue Ticket. I tore through The Water Cure in like 5 hours when I went on holiday with my mum in 2018. And she got really mad at me because I wasn't paying attention to her. But I was like, no, I need to finish this. Like, McIntosh's writing is not... It's not complex.
Mm-hmm.
It is a... I think it's such an interesting take on the dystopian genre because of how little she gives away about the outside world. And all you really know is... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think... Essentially, in Blue Ticket, she places the main character, Calla, in a system that deliberately withholds basic information about her body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're never told why this is. They're never told anything about childbirth. Like, they don't know anything about themselves.
Mm. Which is, like,
arguably
the main thing of, like, dystopian fiction.
And it's very much, I think, a part of, like, we don't really know that much about childbirth. Like, it's not...
Just know that it's rough.
Yeah, I'm just like, that sounds unpleasant. Like, I really, people must really, really... And I mean, I think I want kids, but I haven't decided yet. And you just think, wow, that biological urge must be real.
But also it's kind of like, if you're having a baby and you're having a baby, then like it's decisions made. It's only coming out one way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could come out another way, but that comes with its own things.
But yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think like dystopia has become more of a frightening genre because it's starting to reflect. It's almost starting to feel more real. And when it comes to feminist dystopia, especially like McIntosh's writing, it taps into a real baseline fear for a lot of women, our rights, which in the history of things are still, like, very recently have been up for contest, and in many ways still are.
Will
be for a while. Like, in America, they're still discussing Roe versus Wade, which is literally just a woman's choice not to stay pregnant. And, like, the whole discussion around it is so incredibly... I mean, to listen to those discussions as a woman makes me feel very outside of my own body, in the same way that reading McIntosh's...
Or very in your own body.
Or very stuck in your own body, but certainly not like I have control either way.
No.
Yeah.
So now I feel like we have to talk about Handmaid's Tale.
I mean, we simply... Well, I was just about to say, like, I think Atwood does the exact same thing.
Yeah, she was the trailblazer.
Yeah.
So I did The Handmaid's Tale at A level, I think, and I'm currently about halfway through The Testaments. And it's interesting because obviously Handmaid's Tale is all about the handmaids. So kind of what you were talking about then is like very forefront, and it's actually just so horrible. I think I forgot how like horrifying it was, and then reading The Testaments, it kind of feels less not less horrifying, but because that's not the focus, but because you already know all about that,
yeah,
it's I guess less foregrounded. But yeah, I just remember Handmaid's Tale just being so depressing because you can relate. And then that's terrifying.
Well, I think for me, like, having read it as, like, not preteen, like, I was probably 16. And there's that scene where the main character has sex with the... Or sex, I mean, it's not sex, it's rape.
With the commander.
With the commander. And the way that she describes it, again, as, like, she's not involved. Like, her body is taken away from her humanity. Yeah,
as in she's, like, looking at what's happening.
And it's almost odd that these books are dystopian when you're like, as a woman, how often are we made to feel like that just in everyday life?
Yeah.
Like, the political structures that we idealise and we think, well, thank God we're not in a dystopia. I'm like, yeah, but they still make women feel... Obviously, a lot of the physical violence is there, but...
Dystopia is a spectrum.
Yeah.
And we're on it.
And we are all on it. I love dystopia. It's
just
my
fave. I don't have favourites, but...
We don't have favourite children. We love all books, except for the bad ones.
Dystopia really, like, zones in on what it is to be a human and, like, the human condition and what society is and what...
Yeah.
Like, what's the point in being an aggregate of people? Like, if the way power structures, like, dictate that and stuff, I just love the whole thing and the whole... kind of concept and what it makes you think about.
Yeah.
How it makes you look at your life. I just think it's so, so important. And okay, I don't have favourites, but if you were to ask me what my favourite book is, I would say so easily Brave New World by Aldous Huxley.
Yeah, it's a good book. I really love that.
And it's probably the book that has had the biggest impact. Biggest impact on me, or just was a book that all the things that I think about, it was thinking about. Yeah. So it was just like, yes.
Yeah, like what?
Ideas of... Okay, I'm going to run them off and then I'll, like, dive in.
Oh, she's diving in now.
I'm diving in.
Can't believe you're getting on my territory of diving in.
But wow. Ideas of, like, what is happiness? The difference between satisfaction, being content, happiness. How does art fit into that?
Yeah.
Feelings and pain, how does that link to happiness?
Yeah.
Chaos, stability, just the whole cocktail of what it is to be human. Hey, the whole cocktail.
And we're done. That's it. We've peaked on the podcast. There's no way we're going to get better than that, lads. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We love you. Good night.
But the whole cocktail of like how all those things interact. The ideas of, like, base instinct, satisfying those with, like, a higher intellectual faculty and making sense of, like, the mess. of what being alive and being a human is. Then with like added things of like consumerism and buying and how ownership of things taps into those ideas.
Yeah. Why don't we read the blurb? I feel like everybody needs to read Brave New World, especially now because...
everyone, like, I truly feel so strongly that everyone needs to read Brave New World. And then, when you've read that, read Brave New World Revisited, which is his essays on it.
And I mean, every man says they've read 1984.
Okay, 1984, great book.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's the one that gets all the attention.
Yeah, I prefer Brave New World. 1984, also good. I would recommend reading it, especially so that when you tell people you read it, you can actually back that up with some facts, because we've all done it before.
I read Brave New World long, 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 long before 1984.
Yeah,
I've read... that's classic me, isn't it? It's like, oh, everyone's read 1984, so I'll go over here.
Don't worry, hun, I did the same thing. Good to know we're both terrible.
Okay, I'm going to read the blurb, and then if it's missed anything out that I think is important... with regards to just the bare bones.
I mean, what I will say about these vintage classic covers is the blurbs give nothing away.
Which is good. Because it piques your interest.
Yeah, and I think they assume that you know a little bit about the book.
Yeah.
But when you assume...
little quick. Also, Margaret Atwood wrote a little introduction. Of course she did.
She's a babe. She's everywhere.
Far in the future, but how far, really? Because far in the future when he wrote this...
it was like today.
Far in the future, the world controllers have created the ideal society. I would like to just include like little inverted commas around ideal.
Yeah.
They're not there, but I would just like to say that. Through clever use of genetic engineering, brainwashing and recreational sex and drugs, all its members are happy consumers. I would also like to put little inverted commas around happy. More on that to follow. Bernard Marx seems alone and harbouring an ill-defined longing to break free. A visit to one of the few remaining savage reservations where the old imperfect life still continues may be the cure for his distress. Huxley's ingenious fantasy of the future sheds a blazing light on the present and is considered to be his most enduring masterpiece. Okay, so we've got the world state. Family's not a thing. Babies are made in little test tube vibe things.
Love that. Let's keep that. That can stay.
Like... you're not going to want to say that in a minute. And they basically split up all the babies and thus society into five castes.
Mm.
Alpha, beta, gamma, data, and epsilon, I think.
I think that's it.
So the alphas are, you guessed it, on top. And they're to be the leaders. They're allowed to think. Mm. And then you've got... the epsilons. Is it epsilons? It sounds like a printer, doesn't it?
I mean, it sounds like Epson printers, but it's not. Unless.
Well. See, they're like...
conspiracy theory.
They're starved of oxygen and like stuff is done to them so that basically they can just do menial labour. Yeah, basically like they're tampered, like chemicals are given to them so that basically they're just like subservient. Like...
yeah. Cogs in a machine.
Yes, exactly. So no families. Parents aren't a thing. Children are just brought up, I think, like, community, like, in just kind of, like, boarding schools almost. Bouncing off there being no relationships. Sex is, like, so children partake in sex games from, like, very young age.
Yeah.
Like, sex isn't, like...
A thing.
Well, it's very much a thing.
Yeah, yeah, but not, like, a taboo.
It's, like, no. Love is a taboo. Feelings are a taboo. Sex is like there to fulfill an urge so that everyone's content, so that no one's thinking too much, so that there's no instability and no chaos, and it's all just like ticking along.
A well-oiled machine.
Yeah. And then you've got soma, which is a drug kind of like sex.
Yeah.
Fulfilling the same purpose. The phrase is better a gram than a dam, or take a holiday from the facts. So everyone's just, like, popping pills all the time.
Yeah.
Essentially, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always found the phrase, take a holiday from the facts, really interesting. Because the world state is all about stability and order.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, removing... so art's not a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because art is feelings and emotions. And with that comes chaos and being volatile. And you can't be controlled. But take a holiday from the facts... facts, you would think, kind of go with order. It's that sort of like straight line, this is how it is, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, yeah.
But the facts of humanity are that it is a bit mental.
Yeah.
So I always found the juxtaposition of that with the phrasing, and that's one of the reasons I love this book so much, is the language isn't like complicated at all.
No, 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 it's not. It's not like, yeah, it's not written in a way that tries to throw you around. It is quite, I remember, it's very blunt.
But the use of language is like fascinating.
Yeah.
And
pointed.
Yeah, because like any sort of propaganda and like doublethink in 1984 and all that stuff, it's so interesting how people are saying things but they're not thinking necessarily about what they're saying, which is why it's such a good book to study and like read essays about as well, because it just is.
And I mean, I think just a good book to read and then maybe take a look at the world around us. And it's, I don't think we touch enough on how terrifying it is that these books that we so easily classify as dystopia, which is not a positive term, feel very close to home.
But that's what I think, that annoys me when people say dystopia is, like, dystopia isn't far removed from life, it's very close, that's why it exists. Really frustrates me.
But it's got this reputation. Yeah,
yeah, that's what really frustrates me, because it's like you've completely missed the point.
I think it's such a key point of like literature could teach us a lesson.
But it's just magnification and like it's distilled to be very dramatic.
Yeah.
But everything that's in all these books is out there now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just there's other stuff.
And especially with them thinking of certain concepts that have become very, you know, to, they wrote to be scary, to be off-putting, to be unnerving, and now it's stuff that, like, the surveillance, all of that, it's stuff that we just don't think twice about, and the kind of, this idea that facts are contestable, or something that you don't need to pay attention to, or something that isn't important to your language, that stuff that has obviously, I mean, become such a large part of this whole rhetoric around fake news.
What I think resonated with Brave New World is the idea that art is kind of, art and feelings are the things that make us human. So like the people in this book, it's not a humanity.
No.
Because there's a bit that it's like reclaiming the right to be unhappy.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to be content, because if you're content, then you're not going to pose a problem.
You're malleable.
Yeah, and it's all... But it's not... It's, what is also so interesting is it's not for, I don't think, like, a political purpose. There's, like, a few chapters where the main protagonist or the, like, big figureheads in the book all are discussing it. And it's not some, like, conspiracy. Obviously, some people have more power.
Yeah.
And enjoy certain things. But it's not, like, that's not the main thing. Obviously, that's an aspect. But that's not, like, oh, so that we can live this life and ha-ha-ha, look at all them. It's a genuine, but for a society to function and for people to be happy, then this is what we have to do. Otherwise, it's chaos and there's war and there's like people are hurt, because when you, as soon as you engage with feelings, you have this whole other mess. So it's looking at like what a society is and should be.
Well, I think it very much falls into that like classic dilemma of, would you rather have free will or would you just rather be happy? Because while obviously being, while they're not incompatible, very often having free will and having, yeah, and not being drugged and sedated to just exist. And I mean, like you say, like, even if you exist at the top of a system, you are still part of a system. You are still a cog in the machine. But I do think it is interesting. And we, yeah, I think it's a really interesting discussion, because, I mean, I just remember doing, like, when we were studying philosophy and that question coming up, and there's a party that's like, well, I don't know, maybe it would be nice to just be happy all the time. But then there is something that just innately draws you to being like, but actually, being able to be unhappy is a freedom.
But the thing is, I also find, is that I don't like the use of the word happy, because I don't think you can be happy unless you can be unhappy. And that's why I think, like, satisfied and content seem more appropriate.
Yeah.
Because it's tapping into utilitarianism ideas for maximum pleasure.
Yeah.
And a society. But that's also really interesting, because John Stuart Mill and his book on utilitarianism.
Yeah.
Is the that classic phrase of, is it better to be a pig satisfied than a human dissatisfied?
Yeah.
Or, and the Socrates dissatisfied and a fool satisfied. so like fits into this idea. But then his one of his really important points is that to be satisfied, you need to be employing your higher faculties.
Yeah.
So like art and creativity.
Well, satisfaction is a very complicated feeling.
But it's so simplified in this through drugs and sex. But there's still, obviously, and that's the whole tension with the protagonist, it's still not enough.
But would you say it's satisfied or, like, satiated, comfortable? Or not even
Well, they
aware?
Don't even know, do they?
But that's the thing. They I don't even it is know. So interesting because it does raise that question of it's like, if you are not given choice over the feelings that you feel, are you really feeling anything?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's all about feeling, and feeling is what makes you properly exist and being a human. But it's also terrifying and it's a danger, and the whole society is structured to sort of keep that at bay.
Well, I think that is why dystopia can so often be terrifying, is that it's always close to home.
Mm.
It's always...
It is home.
It is home.
It's just...
It's looking at the way that we already live through a very specific lens, and it's not a lens that requires a huge leap.
No, it's just distilling certain aspects and removing... certain freedoms.
Yeah, I will also, and I won't go into loads of detail about it, but I will, in a similar vein, shout out Marge Piercy's Woman on the Edge of Time, which is a book about a Hispanic woman in New York who gets unjustly put into a mental hospital, but she can see the future. And weirdly, this is meant to be, well, meant to be or not meant to be, it's a question again on the way that, or largely a comment on the way that people were treated in mental hospitals in the 70s and 80s, but also instead of challenging the world that we live in, it almost challenges the world that we think we want to live in by the way that it jumps into a utopia almost, and kind of forces you to reckon with that versus reality. I won't go into more detail about it because I just think it's really worth reading, and actually anything you say about it kind of gives it away.
One of those,
but it's really, really good. And if you enjoy or have enjoyed any of the books that we've spoken about today, you will enjoy Woman on the Edge of Time. The classic feminist novel, as it says on the front. We love a feminist novel. We love them. I really, 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 really tell you what I want, what I really, really want. I really, really enjoyed that Baileys and coffee.
So nice.
Girl, you got me hooked. Anything to ease the pain, really.
Of what you dislike.
Of what I dislike.
See what I did there?
What I dislike is the fallacy of a holiday. And my whole life was a lie because I grew up thinking that when you went on holiday, it was like free time off. It's not time off, kids. It's borrowed time. Because you go back, you got 200 emails. And then you spend the next 3 weeks twice as stressed as you were before.
That is the problem.
We need to find a way to solve that problem. I've heard of these strange beasts where they have people who cover their work while they go away, but that's literally not something that I've ever watched happen with anybody that I know.
Is that actually a thing? Kind of depends on the work though, because I don't think either of our jobs people could cover it because they're like projects with relationships with people.
It's very much like a project-based thing. But anyway, everything is a lie. Holidays mean nothing.
Well, no, they do mean. They mean a lot.
They
when
do
you're
mean
on
something,
them.
And actually,
they mean
so I really, much. I really just... enjoyed my week off. I do love my job, but I did enjoy my week off. But this week
it's
has been
so important
hectic.
To have time off.
Take time off for yourselves, guys. Even though you can't go anywhere or do anything.
No, but I feel like that's been a whole thing.
Yeah.
Especially for me, I was like, you don't. What's the point? There is such a point.
There is a point. Do it. Do it. I waited until, what month is it? Oh my God, it's October to do it. And look, kids, I've got some regrets. I've got some regrets.
She waited too long.
I waited too long. We're past the point. I'm weird now.
Now. Weirder.
Weirder. More weird. That's my dislike, is we were all lied to forever.
What your dislike is that you can go on holiday, but when you come back, life will be harder.
Yeah. Basically, my dislike.
A holiday from the facts.
That's what I need. Dun, dun, dun.
I think it's called heroin in this society.
Oh, okay. Not sure I can commit to that. I'm just really busy tonight. What do you hate this week? Sweet angel.
Fitting for dystopia.
Mm?
The absolute shit show.
Oh, just planet Earth right now.
No. Specifically, the shit show that is...
Oh, I think I might know what you're going to say.
fill in the gap.
Is it going to be the Tories not giving kids school meals?
And just everything else.
Yeah.
And MPs getting a pay rise, but not NHS workers. Oh no, not the people that have literally saved our lives.
I would like to have some choice over my taxes, only in the sense that whatever portion I pay to MPs getting a pay rise and having their meals subsidised in Parliament, I would like to take that away and give that to the NHS and children who just need to eat lunch. Call me crazy, all right? Call me crazy.
The fact that Wetherspoons got more money
than
Manchester.
Mm. We love Andy Burnham, though. What a lad. What a boy. Love that guy. Big energy from him. King of the North.
Can everyone just read Brave New World, 1984?
And then just have a word. Have a word with everyone and be like, guys, we're getting a little bit close to this. It's not looking good.
Fuming. I'm at the end of my tether.
I'm fuming.
Women on the edge of time, more like women on the edge of her tether.
Less catchy, but more real. I mean, yeah, we kind of have been living in dystopia. And I think we haven't we've not given loads of airtime. Maybe we have. I don't know. We've spoken about the pandemic, but I mean more in terms of like the daily effect, even if you don't think it's having an everyday effect on you, just the sheer effort and mental space that it requires to continue going in what is essentially a global crisis.
Mm. It's tough.
It's tough, and it's okay to, like, yeah, like we said, you need, like, take holiday. I don't know why we've suddenly become, like, your aunties. But, like, honey, take a break. You need it. You need it.
You're radical aunties.
I want this for you. You're radical aunties. You're radical left-wing aunties. Say, like, radical, like, maybe you should do something crazy and feed the poor children.
The fact that, oh, God. No, but it's an important balance between knowing how lucky you are and focusing on all the good things that you still have, of which there are so many, but also recognizing that the structures in place right now are
broken. I do worry about the way in which people, and I'm certainly guilty of it as well, where bad things happen now and we're just sort of in this weird cycle of being like, well, bad things happen. And it's like, no, but we actually, they happen because of people.
This is the thing, like, nothing changes, and then that's just depressing. But you've just got to keep talking about it, but don't talk too much about it so that you don't actually do anything about it.
Yeah. Write your MPs, petition, spread the word. On a slightly different note this week, and it requires me to go grab something.
You're not going to like it when you see it.
Oh my God, you're not going to do what I think you're going to do. Oh my gosh. Guys, I think she's grabbed her ukulele. Do you hear what that is, kids? That's the sound of self-indulgence. She hasn't even tuned it before the performance.
I'm here. Oh, that's off.
I might just include this and then just cut you actually playing.
Okay, kids, so I have been learning the ukulele, and I think we should end on a slightly more positive note, so I'm going to play.
A really interesting interpretation of positive.
Also a really interesting interpretation of playing. But so I bought a ukulele, and I bought the ukulele in order to play Breeze Blocks by Alt-J.
I can't believe this is happening.
Which I'm going to do now, and you guys are going to be amazed. I think you're going to be so proud of me. Okay. This is Breeze Blocks by Old Jay. Enjoy. This is probably going to sound horrible. Why does that sound worse than usual? There is something off about it. It's pretty weird. Right, and this is what you get for trying to low-key flex, guys. So it turns out that I actually can't play the ukulele all of a sudden. It's so out of tune. Oh my God, because I've been tuning it to a violin. That's why. I think we should probably leave this there. Okay, guys, Elle has left the room now, and I've tuned it correctly to a ukulele, not a violin, and I'm going to play you Breeze Blocks to play this episode out. Enjoy.